Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Show with Jackie Wayans. Inspiration through word and song for you.
Darker days are just before your door. Sometimes that's the way it feels. But don't give up. Don't ever give up, because God is right there waiting to take you into your dawn. And our guest tonight knows very much about that. I'm your host, Jackie Wayans. You're listening to Don't Give Up Radio. It's a pleasure to be with you another week. And we have tonight with us artist Vernell Payton. He is now living in Chicago, but he stems from New Orleans, Louisiana. And he's passionate. He's passionate about music. He's passionate about creating powerful lyrics and powerful music within the R&B soul music genre without compromising the message, which is so important to do, because you want the power of the word to still be there. And you'll hear his debut single with you throughout the show. But importantly, we're going to focus on the fact that he hails from New Orleans and writes about the time right before Hurricane Katrina and how that affected his life to how it led him to where he is today. And so we can appreciate his musical sound, that kind of Luther Vandross, the Anita Baker, Smokey Norfolk thing, and having seen him on Sunday's Best, we know the talent is there. But to listen to the story that is behind the gift, the beauty of this show. I always say the show is about the story, not the celebrity. So I'm thankful that we could have both tonight. And I welcome you. Welcome, Vernell.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. What an honor. And let me just make sure that I start off by just saying thank you once again for the opportunity to be here. It's things like this, you know, so often we can take for granted. But, you know, when I look back and I recognize that Just this time last year, I was not doing these things. My voice was not heard. And so today I'm one step closer to purpose and destiny, and God has been true to his word. So for that alone, for you having me to be able to share with you on this evening, it's an awesome and a tremendous blessing, and I'm excited about it. And once again, thank you so much for this opportunity.
Wow, it really is a pleasure and a gift for me to be able to hear the many ways that God has moved in the lives of people and have kept them on purpose, kept them to the point where they could see what all the pain and all the suffering was actually for. And if you're listening tonight and you're going through it and you're thinking to yourself, I just really can't make it another hour, stick through this show for the hour, and I guarantee you at the end you will be thinking to yourself, God, if you could do that for him, please do it for me. And I know the God that has done it for him, has done it for me, will do it for you if you put your faith and your trust in him, because he is faithful. When we come back, we're going to talk with Vernell about life in New Orleans.
Do you mind if I testify, tell you of the goodness of my Lord, share some of what he's done for me, how he's opened up so many doors? You may look at me from the outside and think I got here on my own, but there's no way that you could ever know how much grace and mercy I've been shown. Oh, if you look into my eyes, you see life has tried to get the best of me. I know the giver of life personally. He's the reason that I sing his name, Jesus, and he loves me. And I know this, 'cause he died for me and he rescued me. There's no greater love in the world. His name is Jesus, yes, he loves me. And I know this, 'cause he said it to me when he rescued me. There's no greater love in the world. Oh, how he made a way for me. If he hadn't loved me through the mistakes that I made, I just don't know where I would be. Oh, he showed me so much favor, and now I understand amazing grace. Through all of the pain, all of the shame, I realize there is nothing that could take. Of me, but I know the giver of life personally. He's the reason that I see. Oh, Jesus, yes, he loves me. I know this, 'cause he died and he rescued me. No great love.
I'm your host, Jackie Wayans, and that was Smokey Norfolk's No Greater Love. You know, there's so many things that I've done, and you never realize just by looking at us what we've been through. But life, when it's tried to get the best of you, I want you to remember Romans 10:9, which says that if you confess with your mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved, and that is the beginning of a relationship that can carry you through the deepest waters and through the hottest fires, never leave you, never forsake you, and bring you out to the other side, as we will hear quite literally in Vernell's story. So, Vernell, listen, I'm a New Yorker. I've never been to New Orleans, always wanted to go, especially for the good food. Now, in the movies, we see the big picture, you know, we see the Mardi Gras and all the movies and everything like that. But tell us what, paint a picture of what was life really like in New Orleans as you were growing up, before Hurricane Katrina, before any of that stuff that put you guys on a national spotlight scale. What was life like? So can you explain it?
Yes, actually I can. Well, for me, to be very honest with you, life was very, I guess you could say, strategic. I guess you can say life was very systematic. And when I say that is because I was very sheltered as a child. So coming up as a young man, of course, naturally, I repeated that lifestyle, work, church, home, work, church, home. And then my friends who actually, they remain my friends even after 17, 18 years to this date, their lives were the exact same. So there was never really anything of difference in life. And the reason being that my life was so systematic is because my mother had to be really overprotective of us because of the loss of my father. I'm not ashamed of sharing that story, but my father was very abusive, and my mother shot my father self-defense one particular night, and I lost my father at the tender age of right at 3-4 years old. But as far as life, I mean, you know, here in New Orleans, you have the food, you have the festivals and things of that nature. That's really all there is. I mean, you know, it's a very historic city. I've come to discover with traveling, we're behind when it comes to a lot of the economical things because, you know, our monies are kind of generated into more of the, like I said, the festivities and the food and the things that draw people here, the Essence Festivals. And, you know, it's a wonderful place. But the one thing that stands out about New Orleans that I love is despite the economic delay, I guess you can say, that we have, I don't think that there's any place that you'll find such Southern hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
wow.
You will not find, you know, it would be so funny if you were to actually come here because family would literally, they will embrace you as if they've known you all their lives. And it's
wow.
Literally like that everywhere you go here in New Orleans. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I remember seeing this piece of a documentary where a gentleman mowed his grass and his neighbor's grass. For years, the neighbor evacuated after Hurricane Katrina, but he felt he was definitely going to come back one day and that if it had been him, he'd want someone to have maintained his property for him while he was gone. So he, the same love and care that he gave to his house, he gave to his neighbor's house, not knowing when he was going to come back or if he was coming back, but he was going to give it the love and respect that he felt that it was deserved. And that really touched my heart. So I think that's a little glimpse of what you're saying. Now, you already said a mouthful, and this show really is about you. We're going to come back to New Orleans for a second, but I wanted to hone in on this 4-year-old little boy who loses his father. Well, first of all, you grow up with abuse around you. Was it that you felt that this abuse was normal? Did you already get comfortable to the sounds and the noises? Were you still fearful? What were those moments for you growing up?
Growing up, I am 33 years old now, and I am godly afraid of domestic violence. Like, I refuse to deal with it. I run from it. I avoid it as much as possible. It's not anything. I have a very peaceful life, and if there's any person or anything that comes into my circle that disrupts the peace of God that's in my life, I immediately cut it off. And I've been this way because of the episodes coming up as a child. Granted, me being so very young, I have an older sister who's 4 years older than I am. She's able to relate a little bit more about the stories than I am because I was so young when it all transpired. But there are little things that I do remember. I remember a prayer request that my mother always had, and she would always say, she said, "Son, if you ever feel as if you have to express yourself in violence or in an aggressive manner, please do Mama a favor and just leave. Don't stick around, just leave." And so here it is, years later, I am literally still implementing those requests that was made of my mother. So I remember those stormy nights. I remember those dark and gloomy nights of my father coming home. Might I add, let me say this, great man. I can only imagine what life would have been if he was still here. However, my father got connected with the wrong people, I guess you can say, drinking, could not control his liquor.
Yeah.
And as a result, because of him being under the influence, he became a total different person. I remember a night of my mother being home and my father coming home after a long day of work. And me being in a room, I didn't know exactly what transpired, but I remember hearing my mother hit the floor and crying, and it's told to me that the story was my father came home, he requested that my mother get off the phone. She was on the phone with my aunt, and my mother didn't get off the phone in a timely manner, and my dad hit my mother in the head with a brass candle holder.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, so it's like the intensity of that all. You know, and so as a result, I've developed this great level of sensitivity when it comes to women in general, you know, because I was that ear that had to listen to my mother, and I was that shoulder, you know. Here I am, a young boy, and my mother's pouring all of her issues and her problems to me, and I'm there to have to be that listening ear and that son, as well as that mentor, to have to put my arms around her and say, "Oh, Mama, it's going to be okay. You're going to get better. It's going to turn around. It's going to be better."
Right,
you know?
Right. And I definitely heard that story of men who are fabulous, wonderful individuals until they take that drink, and it becomes a Jekyll and Hyde situation. And, you know, it's hard to pull away because you're looking at the man that you know that they are, and at the same time they're being destroyed by this alcohol. And our time's going to go quickly, I can tell, because you've got so much to delve into. We're going to come back to this. It's going to circle because you can see how the things in our lives, the patterns, our lives really don't leave us until we address them. So it really does circle back in your life. But first, let's talk about Hurricane Katrina. Where were you when it hit, and how did it disrupt your world?
Yes. Fast forwarding to Hurricane Katrina, I'm actively involved in my church. I'm working at that particular time. I'm working as a security officer at the local casino here in the city. I worked a graveyard shift, 11 to 7. I never forget working that night and just hearing over the news, you know, that we were facing a pretty bad storm and that, you know, at this particular moment, the mayor has just deemed it an emergency that we evacuate if we could. That morning when I got up, because mind you, New Orleans had been threatened with hurricanes and storms several times before, so for many people, it was just, oh, another phase, you know, we're going to get past this, you know, it's not going to be that bad, so I'm not going to go too far, I'm going to just maybe go right up the road with some family members or some friends, and we'll be right back in the city the next day. Well, that morning when I got off, I left went into the parking lot, pulled off. Some friends of mine who actually, one of the guys who worked with me, they ended up calling me as I was driving home because I didn't, honestly, I didn't have any intent on leaving. I was literally going to, I was just telling some family members that I was going to kind of weather the storm and I'm going to wait it out because I don't think it's going to be as bad as they said that it would be. So I go home, I get a phone call, and one of my coworkers, who a good friend of mine, he says, hey, well, you know, since you have the bigger vehicle, we were all thinking of just carpooling, leaving, we'll pitch in for gas, and we'll just make a trip of this. And I thought about it, I considered it. I said, well, you know, okay, well, let's do it. Let's make it a fun thing. Let's get on out of here. We left the day before Hurricane Katrina. We left on the 28th that morning. Long story short, we're in Atlanta. We're with some family members and some friends, and we had absolutely no idea of the devastation or anything that's going on in the city. I'm reaching out to my own mother, my biological, my flesh and blood, my heart, that's my girl. I'm reaching out for her. Literally, I find myself 30 days later with no call, no talking, did not hear her voice, don't know where she is, don't know what the outcome of my mom or my older sister is, because we can't tap into lines because lines are down. So I didn't hear from my own mother for 30 days. Literally 30 days. I'm trying to hold it all together for everyone else, but yet I'm broken on the inside because I have no clue on where the people that matters most to me are. For 30
right.
days, I'm in
so,
Atlanta.
For yeah, I'm just trying to follow that devastation and what that would feel like, and I'm sure by this time you might be starting to see stuff coming across the news. When you finally realized how bad it was, when was it that you make your way home, or did you make your way back?
I did not make my way back at all, to be very honest with you. Honestly, you know, let me say this. Many people, they cry about Hurricane Katrina. And I'm a very optimistic person, very optimistic, and, you know, I'm always trying to find the good in everything, and it's just my nature for some odd reason. And so my friends, you know, my family, they're breaking under the pressure. They're crying about everything that they've lost. By this time, we finally gotten a report that my house that I was living in prior to the storm was completely covered in water. Like, there was absolutely no salvaging anything at all in this house. Everything was gone. And it was, show you just how determined I am. I never forget, I stood in the living room and I told my friends, I said, listen, I said, y'all can sit here and y'all can cry about spilled milk if you want. I say, I'm going to go out and I'm going to make the most of this. I got out there. I never forget what I had on. I had a pair of Rockaway denim shorts, a white T-shirt, and some Nike Air Force One tennis shoes. That's all I had that I evacuated with, literally. That's all I had. And three times I got lost on Interstate 285 in Atlanta before it finally dawned on me that it was a big circle, of course. So here I am, the third time lost, and I used to sell cars, so I knew that me getting a job in the car sales business would be an easy task because the overall turning rate in car sales is pretty high. I went to a couple of dealerships, put in some applications. By the 22nd of September of 2005, I was working at Drive Time Auto Sales in those black Rockaway denim shorts, white T-shirt, and Air Force Ones. They allowed me to work in that attire until I was able to get my first check to buy me a suit.
Wow. Wow, it really continue.
Yeah, no, this for me would be when we talk about how you make lemonade gives you lemons. You know, we can cry about the storm and we can reminisce on spilled milk, but my thing is, what do we do moving forward? Do we get stuck in what we can't control, or do we find the God? Because I'm going to tell you this, wherever there's devastation, wherever there's negativity, wherever there's something bad going on in your life, God is always present. And if you can just let the dust settle, you'll find God's hand in the midst of your mess. The reason that most people are overtaken by their mess is because the enemy knows that if he can magnify your problem, and then what with him magnifying your problem, eventually what happens is he minimizes your God. So then we take our focus off of the promises of God, and we focus our attention on the problems of our present time. And God is saying, I just want you to stay. I want you to remember my word. Remember who I am. Remember what I promised you. And if I can get you to just remember what I promised you, you'll come to find out that whatever you're going through was a sweatless victory.
Wow, you are definitely saying a lot. And you're also pointing to the fact that God is with you through the fire and through the flood. When we come back, we'll hear more about how God worked through this life in order to take Vernell to exactly where he wanted him to be.
Can't live without you. I'm nothing without you. I just wanna be.
That was Vernell Payton with You. Lovely, lovely song.
Thank you.
Lovely, lovely lyrics. I'm stronger with you. Thought I lost it all, but you breathe. And that phrase reminds me of Fred Hammond's song. In fact, Fred T. Williams and I were talking about that when he was on the show, Breathe Into Me, O Lord, Day by Day, so that my spirit can be renewed. You know, that breath of life that we need from the Lord,
yes,
when things look so dark and so bleak. And here you are, you know, you have this mindset that what you lost, you lost. You know, the Lord allowed you to get out of New Orleans, and here you are in Atlanta, and you're making the best of it. But then I talked early on about how, you know, past traumas and past unresolved issues from our lives tend to track back. And so, you know, you get married, and you now consider that the wrong woman. But when you met her and you decided to get married, of course, you thought it was the right person. So talk to us about that scenario, about the woman that you met and why you thought she was the one to marry at the time.
Gotcha. Well, first of all, you know, I was married twice. I have a beautiful baby boy, 8 years old, David. Now, David's mom and I, we remain great friends. Like, we're really, you know, we're awesome parents when it comes to our son. And the reality of our situation, be very transparent. First of all, before Katrina, her and I were great friends prior to Katrina. It was actually an unexpected phone call that I never forget getting from her. I had lost contact with her, and I received a phone call from an unknown number like early in the morning, and it was her. I was in Atlanta. She was back in New Orleans with her family, and I received the phone call. And so from that moment, we kind of rekindled what we had, and we knew we were sweet on each other, and she's a real sweetheart. And the reality is, the reason we ended in divorce is simply because we were just young. We were young. I was mannish. She was womanish. You couldn't tell us nothing. We thought we had, you know, we thought we had all of the answers. And, you know, the reality of marriage kicked in. You know, I realized that, you know, I wasn't so ready to compromise certain things, and she wasn't ready to balance out having an actual marriage and then putting her family, who were pretty much kind of, they were real dominant women in the family. And, you know, so we always bumped heads because of that reason. So that ended in divorce. There were some domestic approaches even in that marriage where the family and I got into altercations because they were always in our business. And because of those signs, because of those things, I thought that it would be best for me to back away and to just get out of the situation, because, mind you, I'm still remembering and playing back in the back of my head what happened to my father. I'm also spiritual enough to know that the enemy would love to continue what we call a generational curse. So my attitude was, I believe that the enemy is trying his hardest to repeat this process so that my son can grow up without a father, and then that cycle continues. So, you know, this was me in action, breaking a cycle and making a conscious decision to say, you know what, God, I see your hand. Enemy, I see what you're trying to do, and I have to make the most conscious decision to break this cycle. And that's what I did. The good news is I'm grateful to say that we are and we do remain great friends. We are great parents. We just understood that we were very young. We were not ready for marriage. We were not ready to put in what it takes to make a successful marriage. And so as a result, you know, we're better off parenting our son together. Now, fast forwarding years later, the second wife was not the will of God. I say that very proudly and boldly. Was not the will of God, you know, did not even consult with God on this. I moved strictly on the fact that this particular young lady was my very first girlfriend in 1994 in junior high school. She always had a special significance about her. I always deemed her to a certain level because of the little puppy love that we had in junior high school and, you know, just the friendship for 20 years plus that we maintained for so many years. She came in my life kind of when things were kind of very quiet in my life. I wasn't dating anyone. I was really just focused on myself and getting and pushing my career and getting back on track with God. I made some promises to God, even in the area. I never forget it, man. The enemy is so slick. I never forget making a promise to God because one of the struggles that I had coming up in the church was I wasn't as consistent in my area of giving. Not because I didn't want to give, but because as a young father, in my mind, I would be wrestling with giving or do I prioritize to make sure that I have a roof over my head for my son, you know, and food on the table, and he needs clothes, and, you know, so there was a responsible answer that I can give if anyone asks why was I not consistent. But at the end of the day, we have to be spiritual and faithful enough in the things of God to understand that no matter what we're facing, we have to trust him enough to still put him first no matter what. And so I made a vow to God. I never forget going to my pastor, and I said, Bishop, I said, please pray for me. I never forget this. I went in his inbox on Facebook, and I said, Bishop, please pray for me. I said, because I know that one of the things that's holding me back is because of my lack of consistency in giving. And I said, I really want to beat this devil. I want to overcome this stronghold, and I want to be better in my consistency in giving. Well, for a whole year, I was great at it. It felt so good because I even beat the enemy at his own game. Soon as I would get my check, I would go directly to our website, and I would go online and give soon as I got my direct deposit, and where I would not be shadowed by anything else but God. I met this woman. She came back in my life, and everything that I was putting so much great effort into, I started seeing the blessings of God come into my life. Doors were open. Money coming from every which way. Opportunities coming from every which way. And I know in my heart it's because I've gotten on track with God in the level of my consistency with giving. I knew this. This woman comes along, and everything took a standstill. Everything took a standstill. She did not believe. She put on a great presentation as if she was all for what I stood for as it relates to being a Christian and putting God first and loving God. Did not love God at all. Very domestic, very verbal, very promiscuous. We were married for 7 months, and the whole 7 months we were married, she was sleeping around, very abusive, jumped on me 4 times. Went to jail for that twice. And
oh,
here
she
I am.
Did or you did?
She did.
She did or you did?
She did.
Mm.
Yeah, she did. Went to jail twice for jumping on me.
Wow.
And here I am in the middle of a storm. My focus has been taken off of doing what's right before God. And all I'm thinking, as any person with it in their right mind would have thought, what do I do to save my family? What do I do to save my marriage? What's going on here? Why the sudden change? What is the problem here? Well, this woman had been piecing me together from afar for a whole year, a couple of months, and she knew that I was getting ready to sign a record contract. She knew that there's some other personal things that I was coming into. And so she attached because she was looking to make a come up for her and her children. And everything hit the fan. Everything came to the surface after the fact. The last time she went to jail, God revealed everything to me, and it was so amazing. You knew it was nobody but God, because the day after she went to jail, I'm driving to work, and I get an unknown phone call, and I never answer numbers I don't know. I never answer. And I get a phone call, and it was her youngest son's grandmother calling me. Mm-hmm. I had never had a conversation on the phone with this lady. And mm-hmm. I had only met this woman one time. And it was her youngest son's grandmother. And she reached out and she said, "Hey, baby." She said, "This is Miss So-and-so." I said, "Hey, how are you, mama?" You know, I called her mama. I said, "How are you, mama?" She said, "I'm good." She said, "You know, just called to touch bases with you. Just wanted to hear your voice and see how everybody was doing." She had no clue of what had just transpired. And so when she asked me, "How was the family and everybody?" I said, "Oh, well," I said, "it's funny that you called me." I said, "Because we got into a real big altercation. She went to jail for jumping on me." I said, "And she's in jail right now." And the lady, she take a deep breath. And then she just said, "Son," she said, "I didn't want to have to tell you," she said, "because I felt that was not my place to tell you." She said, "but if we can be transparent," she said, if I can talk to you, if you have a moment, I'd like to talk with you." Now, mind you, this woman had no intent to talk to me about this. She was calling mm-hmm. me originally just to see how I was doing. And mm-hmm. she began to share with me everything that her grandson had gone through.
Mm.
And they were married for 6 months. I was married to her for 7 months. And the literally exact same process and the exact same cycle of what I experienced with her, he experienced with her.
Right, right.
And so, here I am. I'm crying on the way to work because I'm like, "Lord, you are so amazing," because I was literally in the process of making some major moves with this woman. We were house shopping, you know. I was getting, you know, I had just signed the record deal, so proceeds and things of that nature from the label, as well as some other things that I have that's on the way. They were supposed to all happen within that time frame. Well, God set it up where something happened where the judge had to push everything back. Literally called me and said, "Well, Mr. Payton, we're going to have to push some things back because we want to revamp some stuff because I don't feel as if the wording in your contract is detailed enough." Well, I was upset about that. I'm upset because here you have a man, I'm ready to live. I'm ready to do good things for my family. I'm ready to, you know, to put my wife in the house that she wants. And now that I see, and I don't know who this is for even that could very well be listening, the process and what I've learned in that season was one thing, two things that I learned. The first thing was learn to wait on God. Learn to wait on Him. And then secondly, do not fight the processes of God. What we can't see, He sees. Don't you know how awesome it must be when I look back And I reminisce on that situation. And I realized that God spared, he loved me enough to spare me when I didn't have enough sense to spare myself. That is so amazing.
It is. I'm listening, and those two points that you made are the key lessons, because, you know, I know all types of people are listening to this, people who are aware of the scriptures, people who are not. And yes, we know that God absolutely hates divorce, but what happens when we don't consult him and when we make these vows of forever, being forever yours, being forever committed to someone, and that they have malintentions and they're going into it with deceptive purposes. So you must take that pause and make sure you are seeking God first in all your ways, because he's the only one who really promises to be forever yours. When he does it, it is absolutely concretely true. When we come back, we'll find out where exactly Vernell is today.
Just too good to me. There is
Prioris by Vernell Payton. And, you know, there's a line in there that says, if you choose him, oh, the joy that you will find. And that is absolutely the truth. And, Vernell,
yes,
talk to us about your life today, since you were able to unshackle yourself from that situation. You are now, we know, a recording artist. The record contract went through, and you're using your gift, your talent, to tell people about the love of God. Tell us how you feel that this has really healed you and helped you to heal others.
You cannot have ministry without going through something. For me, you know, for any preacher, for any minister, for any evangelist, or whatever you deem yourself to be, your ministry is never effective unless you're really able to relate. Every person that God used in the Bible, they always had some sign of a past. They always had something went on in their lives, and out of their misery, God brought about ministry. So moving forward, where I am today, I still have issues. I still go through problems. There's still some uncertain days, but for the most part, I'm at a place of peace. The reason I'm at a place of peace is because I know that God is true to his word. How do I know that he's true to his word? Because he's proven himself over and over and over again. You know, he's never, ever, ever not come through or be true to his word. So where I am today, moving forward, you know, to be very honest with you, a lot of times it still takes time for the reality to really catch up with me, because I'm in awe. I'm like, wow, I made it out of that. What was designed to kill me, God, I made it out. And if I continue to trust in you and keep my hand in your hand, and if I continue to follow you and live for you, you are true to your word. Like, you never lie. You never let me down. There's a scripture that says, you know, I was young and now I'm old, and never once have I seen the righteous forsaken, nor their seed begging for bread. Well, that God is really true to this. When I look back, there's some people that I know couldn't have dared gone through the things that you and I have gone through. They would have given up under the pressure. They would have turned their backs on God by now. They would have cussed God and died. They would have referred to the world system. And here we are today. Every promise that he's made, he's fulfilling it. Record contract. I didn't even think that I would be here today where I am if I was still looking through the lens of where I was. And that goes back to what we said in the very beginning of the interview, how the enemy wants to magnify your problem but minimize your God. If we continue to look at where we are right now, forgetting and not embracing and not understanding that seasons change, we will get stuck in that season and we'll miss everything that God was ultimately preparing for us. I'm in a place of peace. I'm in a place of purpose. I'm moving forward. There's so many great things that are taking place behind the scenes, and I know without a shadow of a doubt that this stuff would never have happened if it had not been built on the heels of trials, tribulations, enemies, circumstances, situations. Because it's these things that build your character. My pastor said something years ago, and I stick with this, he says, the worst place you want to be in life is walking in your purpose, but your character can't keep you there. You know how many people are walking in purpose, and then when we see them fall before the nations and before the public eye, it's because at some point in their walk, at some point in their journey, they lost sight of who made it possible. They lost sight of how they're supposed to act in the circle that they're in. And God has a way of saying, you know what, I got to bring you back to a place because you've forgotten. And so my ultimate purpose daily is that, God, no matter where you take me, may I remain humble in your works. May I never get too big that I'll never tell my story. May I never get too grand. May I never become so arrogant that I don't have time for opportunities even like such as right now. Lord, because my life is a testimony, you did everything for me because one reason, you knew that you can trust me to tell of your goodness. No matter where I am, you knew that you can trust me to share the story and to help someone along the way.
Wow, our time has completely evaporated. For those of you who are listening and you want more of Vernell Payton Jr., I have to add that in there, you can simply find him at VernellPaytonJr.com. If you're here on Blog Talk Radio, do follow me and you will find all the information there, his Facebook page, his Twitter page, his Instagram page, even something called Sonic Bid that I don't know anything about. But he's everywhere. You can't miss him, Vernell Payton Jr., and you can get more information about him and his music. And for those of you who heard this show with Fred T. Williams, Vernell is actually signed as indie artist under that company for Parks and Entertainment. So it really has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, you know, I probably have something that can be a benefit to you. I just wrote my book, Don't Give Up and Win, A Survival Guide to Renewed Virginity, and that is for people who are really the issue of celibacy and abstinence the second time around after divorce, separation, being a widow. And it's a group of people that aren't often talked about on that issue. And so it's available on Amazon. You guys can go out and get yourself a copy. It's very reasonable. And to my listeners, I always say to you, I want you to go through this week and be your own best hero. Because
yes,
the greatest hero of all said that you were worth it when he gave his life for you on Calvary. So until next week, I want you to realize the one who's forever yours and that there's no greater love and he will always, always be with you.